This is episode 108 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. My guest today changed his name, changed his brand, and has some unique marketing ideas to share with us today. Listen carefully. There's a lot of things that you can do during this downtime. In fact, one of those things is to catch up on any interviews that you missed. The Variety Artist Podcast is here when you need it. It's the perfect way to get tips and to hear great stories from some of the greatest minds in the biz. Now on with the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's the proud recipient of the prestigious Lance Burton Award presented in Vegas, as well as the International Brotherhood of Magicians Stage Champion Award and many other national and international titles. He's performed everywhere from comedy clubs to cruise ships. He's even shared a trick of the week that you can find all over social media. Variety artist, I give you Matt Stanley.
Hey!
How's it going, Matt?
Yeah, going great. Going great. Long-time listener, first-time caller. It's good to be on.
I'm glad you're here. Now, when I first heard of you, you had a different name.
I did. I've kind of gone full circle a little bit in some ways. I did start out as Matt Stanley because obviously that is my name. And then kind of to separate myself from everyone and be a little more unique, you know, it was at the time that all the world's greatest magic shows were on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I wanted to, you know, something that was a little more different than just Matt Stanley. And I decided to go with Matthew Stanley. So I did that for a little bit. Like I mentioned, World's Greatest Magic, Jonathan David Bass was on. And I thought that was cool that he added the middle name also. And then my middle name was David. And I just started going by Matthew David Stanley, just kind of based on that. And it, you know, it did really help to kind of differentiate me. But what I found over the last, you know, probably 15 or so years is for some reason, it's hard for people to remember.
That is true. I was going to tell you that because it was more difficult for me to remember than Matt Stanley. Matt Stanley is very easy.
Right. And that's kind of what motivated the change. I mean, many, many times I'd be talking with clients on the phone. It would always be fine then. But when I would actually meet them in person, they would call me David.
Oh, yeah.
They would think it was David Matthew. Or what happened a lot was Michael. I got called Michael a lot of times.
That's strange.
It was annoying, and it was strange because it's like, I get it. It's another male name that starts with an M, but it's not really the same name at all. It happened so much that I had checks that were written to Michael David Stanley.
Oh.
And it happened often enough that this is back before mobile depositing was a thing. That I'd take it to the bank and the tellers at the bank would just be like, oh, someone else did it, huh? And they would still take the check. No issue.
Yeah, my name is John J. Abrams. And I believe this story to be true, although I don't know if it is or not. About 25 or 30 years ago, I joined the Screen Actors Guild. And okay. In the Screen Actors Guild, you can only have one person with one name, with a specific name. About, I don't know, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, when J.J. Abrams became a famous director.
Oh.
I really believe, I don't know if it's true or not, I believe that he used J.J. Abrams because I was registered as John J. Abrams, and I don't know what his first name is.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know either. We'll have to look that up. That's a little trivia question.
People listening to this are going to look that up, and they're going to call me going, you know, his name's James or something.
Yeah, his name's James. Yeah, that's right. You mentioned the Screen Actors Guild. I have a one of my best friends, his name is David Lander, and he went to be a SAG-AFTRA member, and yeah. David Lander is Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley.
Right.
So he had to go by David N. Lander, my friend did. You know, same kind of thing like you're talking about where there can only be one.
And my name's John Abrams, of course. I have many newspapers that have printed up, John Adams does amazing magic.
Yeah, it's weird how, you know, people perceive it. The idea to switch back to Matt Stanley, I figured it's one of those things. MCs would introduce me. They were introducing me as Matt David Stanley and Michael David Stanley. And I just kind of feel like Matt Stanley is just quick, easy to remember, and hopefully sticks in people's minds a little more and is a little more memorable, even though it is a little more plain as far as I'm concerned. Your brand is everything. So if people can't remember it, then you're really doing yourself a disservice.
Kind of a follow-up question. Have you changed your brand? Because Matthew David Stanley sounds, I don't know how to put it, uppity, or sounds David Ogden Stiers. It sounds
right.
Sounds like that. Whereas Matt Stanley sounds like more like the everyday guy.
You know, it was a tough thing for me when I was going through it, because I was like, do I just cut out the David and just go by Matthew Stanley? And I was thinking, well, Matthew David Stanley, the whole reason for that was that it, you know, really stood out. But Matthew Stanley, cutting back to that, to me just kind of sounded like I could just as easily be, you know, an accountant or an attorney or something like that, versus Matt Stanley to me sounded more like, hey, Matt Stanley, that's a fun guy. You know, it's kind of a...
That's the dude next door.
Yeah, a guy that I know, you know, so it was kind of cool. And then something that came from it, and it wasn't my intention at all in the beginning, but it was brought to my attention by several friends that Matt Stanley sounds a lot like Flat Stanley, like the children's book.
Ah.
So that inspired an entirely new thing that I've been doing now. And I only made this transition back at the end of January. Something I forgot to say is this is something I was kicking around, the idea of getting rid of the Matthew David Stanley, for a couple of years. Back in January, I was talking to my friend Gene Anderson, which I'm sure most magicians out there know. Mm-hmm. Gene pulled me aside, and it was almost like an intervention. Like, I thought he was going to think I was drinking too much or something like that. He pulls me off to the side, and he said, I'm worried about you. He said, people can't remember your name. He said, I've known you 20 years. I still don't remember. Does David go first? Does Matthew go first?
Is it Michael?
Yeah. Is it Michael? You know, and then most of the agents and bookers that I work for, they didn't even want to bother saying all of that. So they just called me MDS. Obviously for promotional and that kind of thing, they use the full name. But if I got an email or a phone call from them, hey, MDS, which is fine. Rhyming with Flat Stanley, I kind of got this idea that, well, I travel a lot and perform, or at least I did before all the COVID-19 stuff was happening. Right. You know, go to some cool places. And the same idea with the Flat Stanley is that you take it places and get your photo taken with it and have other people get their photo taken with it. So I had little flat Matt Stanleys made that people after a show, they can come and get their picture taken with flat Matt Stanley. And I take him and pose him in unique places, and, you know, on the beach. And
wait, how tall is flat Matt Stanley?
Flat Matt Stanley, there are two versions. I'm telling secrets here, but, you know, it's all that forced perspective type thing to make it look larger. But I have an 8-inch version that is a lot more portable to carry. And then I have a 12-inch version. So not a big difference in the two, but they turned out really cool. A lot of you are probably familiar with Dan Wolf down at Smoky Mountain Magic.
Yeah.
And I knew that he had the ability to print on the vinyl. And then he also uses like a tough coat or like a PVC for a lot of his props. And I wanted something that would be really durable. So he made a few of these up for me. You know, I'm very thankful for that, because he does great work, and they did turn out fantastic.
That's a great idea. Great promotional item, because people keep it. They hand it to each other. You know, other people look at it. It's a wonderful promotional item. That's a great idea.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And it was something that I didn't know how it was going to go. I've just found myself going up, and even if it's someone I haven't done a show for or something like that, they don't even know I'm a magician. I'm just like, hey, my name's Matt Stanley. I'm a magician. Meet flat Matt Stanley. Can I take your picture with him? People are like, okay, whatever. You know? And so I have all these pictures, and then I've asked someone to do it, and then someone else has been kind of within earshot. And I've had people come up to me and say, hey, I'm a little offended that you didn't ask for my picture with flat Matt Stanley. And I'm like, oh, well, I didn't want to bother you, but here you go. And I'll take a picture of them too. You know, why not?
Maybe you could put somewhere on flat Matt Stanley, hashtag flat Matt Stanley.
Right. And that is not on there, but I do use the hashtag flat Matt Stanley. And then I also own flatmattstanley.com, which my idea is to put all the pictures that I take on there and have it just be a one page thing with pictures of random people there. And then kind of the next thing that I want to do, and I was in the process of doing it, but it's kind of been slowed down a little bit. I want to have stickers that are cut out of flat Matt Stanley that are the you know, not a square sticker, but actually a like a die cut sticker. Mm-hmm. And then it has instructions on the peel off part. If someone takes their picture with him, I give them the sticker and then I say, hey, stick this somewhere and take your picture and then use the hashtag where is flat mat stamp.
There you go.
It's just, it's a process. I come up with some weird ideas and, you know, some of them work and some of them don't, you know?
That's a great idea. Well, let's get off your name for a minute. What type of venues have you been working? You say you've been traveling around a lot. What type of venues do you work?
Mostly lately I've been doing cruise ships.
Hmm.
I just got into that back in November. It's been a whole new venture for me. It's something I tried to break into the market for years. Finally caught the right opportunity to do it. That's been going really well.
How did you finally break into the cruise ship market?
I tried to get an agent for years. I couldn't ever get an agent. And I still don't have an agent. I self-represent. I contacted cruise lines directly and sent them my promotional info, my video, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A few of them I heard back from, and they said, oh, we'll keep you in mind, kind of, you know, almost like a form letter rejection type thing.
Yeah.
I had an email that I got back from Carnival Cruise Lines. They said, well, we're really interested in having you. We're not taking on new acts at this time. However, we will reach out to you in the summertime. And this was in like January of 2019.
Okay.
It was one of those things where I took it with a grain of salt. I'm like, yeah, I probably won't hear anything back from them. But sure enough, late June, I heard back from them and they said, yeah, we're definitely interested. And they started the process of getting me on board. And then I started doing my first cruise dates for them in November. And between November and the end of February, I did 7 cruises for them.
What kind of show are you doing? Are you doing an illusion show, like a stand-up comedy show? What type of show?
Yeah, I do a stand-up comedy magic show. It varies depending on the cruise and the contract, because I come from performing comedy magic in comedy clubs. So as far as they're concerned, they like that because I'm more versatile. They can just as easily put me in the comedy club as they can on the main stage.
Oh, I see.
Because I have shows that will play for, you know, either or. So I'm not doing an illusion show, nothing that's real big and prop based or anything like that. It's very much a briefcase style show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to travel as light as possible because, you know, anyone that flies and travels for gigs, they know that we're not rock stars. We don't have roadies and all that kind of thing that transport our props. So if you're going to use it in your show, you're the one that's lugging it around when you're in St. Kitts and have to get from the airport to the ship. And even once you're there, you're pushing your luggage down a sidewalk that's all gravel or uneven. And then you go all the way down the pier and get on the ship, up the gangway, all that kind of stuff. So anything that you have to travel with, you're the one lugging it as well. So I wanted to have something that would pack as small as possible, but give the biggest punch that I could.
There you go. That's so smart. I had somebody on, I forget who it was, a little while ago that had the exact same advice, that the comedy magician is becoming king with cruise ships. You can fly in, fly out real quick, you know, no big illusions, no big boxes to ship. You know, you go right there with your briefcase or your luggage and there you go. You're ready to go.
Right. And most of the illusion acts, the way I understand, the ones that are still doing ships, they're doing extended contracts on the same ship, whereas I'm a fly-on guest entertainer. So I'm generally not on a ship more than 3 or 4 days at a time.
Mm.
You know, so I'm there, I do my thing, and I get off at, you know, the first available port and fly home or get, you know, fly to get on another ship.
Do you have any other advice on how to break into the cruise market?
Well, I mean, from my experience, I can say just be diligent without being annoying about it. I definitely tried for several years and I didn't give up and it finally paid off. But at the same time, you don't want to be that guy that's pestering them all the time and being annoying. So I would just set a reminder in my phone that would be, you know, every 4 months, every 6 months, I'd reach out and just say, hey, I just want to stay on your radar.
Right.
Not be annoying, finally paid off. Now, that being said, I've only worked for Carnival, even though I've done a significant amount of work for them in a short period of time. But my goal is ultimately to work for other lines. I'm still on the path to trying to find an agent for it, because just having someone else that can go to bat for you is always a plus. And it's easier for them. They already have relationships with the cruise line, so it's not as much of a risk for the line trying out someone new, because you have someone that they already trust vouching for you.
Craig Diamond, I had on here a while back. He's been on cruise ships longer than anybody on the planet, I think over 20 years.
Yeah, I listened
years.
To that interview, yeah.
Yeah, he's so funny because he says, oh yeah, I started out with a 2 or 3 week venture and here I am 20 years later.
If they like you, that's how it kind of tends to go. Self-representing is a lot more work because I'm the one that has to do all of the invoicing and
that's right.
You know, and all that kind of thing. That being said, it's also saving me an agent commission. I can tell you 100% if anyone questions an agent's commission, because of the fact that I'm the one doing all the invoicing and everything, they earn it. The agents earn it because it's a lot of extra work. And, you know, as performers, the fun part for us is getting to go do the show and not necessarily all of the paperwork that goes along with it.
Yeah. Not only do they deserve it because of the paperwork and all, but they do have those connections. So
right.
If you had an agent for a cruise ship, for example, instead of doing 10 gigs, you would be doing 15 gigs or 20 gigs. And that's right. going to add up when you're only paying the agent, whatever it is, 15 or 20% or 10%,
right.
whatever it may be.
Yeah. I think about 15 is about the 12 to 15 is about what most of them are getting right now, from what I understand.
Now you mentioned comedy clubs. You've been working a lot of comedy clubs also?
Yeah. For about the last 11 years, I've been working comedy clubs and everything from independent clubs. And then about 6 years ago, I got in with the Funny Bone Improv chain, which is, you know, the same company as far as the booking's concerned, and tour nationwide for them. I'm kind of one of those guys that I'm a feature act, a middle act that they know can headline, but just doesn't have a name that's a big draw. So a lot of times they'll pair me with a big name act that only wants to work Friday, Saturday night, and then all headline Thursday and Sunday and feature for the big name.
Oh, I see.
Other nights. So, and then a lot of the independent clubs I work for, I work as a headliner in those.
Mm.
The feature spot's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
You don't have all the pressure carrying the show and you don't have to deal with the check drop. You also get paid significantly less. So there's that too.
Well, I was going to ask that. I mean, you don't mind if I ask on the tour, not the individual ones, but on the tour, are you getting one contract paycheck type of thing, or is it per gig?
Are you saying the clubs?
Yeah.
Working the chain. Well, it wouldn't be like a tour per se where I would just go out on the road for 3 months or something like that. It would be everyone's an individual one-off. They're all booked by the same central booker. You know, they'll line you up with about 3 months worth of work, because most of it is Thursday through Sunday. You travel on Thursday, you return on home on Monday.
Yeah.
That next weekend you might have off, or you may be hitting another club. But generally everyone that I do, I end up back home in between. There are, you know, some exceptions in there where it just didn't make sense to do that. Or you might have a club that works Wednesday through Sunday, and in which case you only have a few days. So if you're already in the general area of where the next club is, you end up kind of staying around.
You can enjoy the town for a couple of days, huh?
Right, right. Absolutely.
Louis Fox had a great idea, and I use it all the time whenever I'm touring, is he has an app on his phone. I have it now. It's called, why can't I think of what it's called? Roadside America. Anyway, it tells you all the strange and bizarre things that are all around the United States.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, wherever you are, you type it in, and it tells you all sorts of goofy things that are all around your area, wherever you are.
I've done things with Food Network has an app, and they would have shows that were on Food Network. So I've had a bunch of the diners, drive-ins, and dives, places that Guy Fieri went to and all that kind of thing.
Oh, that's smart, too.
You know, if I'm going to be in Des Moines, Iowa, I always know that I'm going to go to Smokey D's Barbecue because you know, that's the place. And it was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. So
now, can you do back of the room sales or merch when you're doing comedy clubs?
Yeah, when I do comedy clubs, and I wanted a unique item. I wanted something that I could travel with pretty easily. And T-shirts are a hard thing. That's what a lot of comedians have are T-shirts. And I noticed very quickly when I was working clubs that T-shirts, yeah, they are great, but there are kind of two downsides to it. Is one, if you have a T-shirt that has a joke on it, you're obligated to do that joke in the show, or else you're not going to sell any shirts.
Right.
Because most of the time it's out of context and doesn't make any sense. The other issue, and I saw a lot of comics run into this, is they would say, oh, well, last time I was here, I didn't sell any smalls or mediums. It was all large and extra large shirts and 2XL. So they stock up on those and then they get there and everyone wants smalls and mediums.
Right.
And things like that after a show, it's an impulse buy. If you say, oh, well, you can get it off my website later, in most cases, I would say probably only a small portion of the time are they actually going to do that and not buy it in the moment.
Oh yeah. And especially if you have a meet and greet or something afterwards and you're shaking the person's hand and.
Right. Or elbow bumping now, but.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Elbow. That's right. But if you're back there doing that, yeah, probably not even doing the gigs right now, but if you're back there doing that, it is an impulse buy. They're going, oh, I just met this guy and I'm going to get his T-shirt because it has his face on it.
And they want to be supportive of you also, especially if they just enjoyed the show, but you have that kind of finite window of about 20 minutes after the show that you're either going to make the sale or you're not.
What did you decide on?
Something that I was already doing in my show, just kind of almost as a throwaway type gag, was a fire wallet. Mm. People would always come up to me after the show and say how much they, you know, like that fire wallet and where can I get one? And it happened enough times that I was like, maybe I should sell fire wallets.
Yeah.
It developed into something that it started out kind of as a joke, and I bought some, you know, wholesale fire wallets and I pitched them after a show and I ended up selling a whole bunch of them. Oh. It got to the point to where I actually designed my own and had them made, you know, in a large quantity. And I have my own fire wallet that I've been selling in comedy clubs for about 6 years now.
Oh.
The thing with comedy clubs is the pay hasn't gone up in 20 years. It's the same that it was in the 90s, the late 90s.
Okay.
If you're going to make, you know, a living working in comedy clubs, you have to have a merch item that you can sell. In most cases, I get 2 to 3 times what they're paying me to be there for the weekend in sales of fire wallet.
Oh, yeah. And do you have a picture of flat Matt Stanley on the front of one of those fire wallets?
I don't, because I've been doing the fire wallets a lot longer than that, but that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Maybe flat Matt Stanley would be good on the fire wallet cover. Yeah.
I just love flat Matt Stanley. I don't know. That's got a really good ring to it.
Yeah.
So you got to have some cool, like comedy club stories or anything crazy happen at the comedy clubs. Like, they're comedy clubs.
Yeah. I mean, everything and anything has happened. Friday night shows are rough. You have people that they get off work and then they go out to dinner and have drinks with coworkers. And then they want to come to the late night comedy club show that's at, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock on a Friday night. And that pretty much ensures that they've been drinking since about 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been very lucky as far as I haven't had too many terrible hecklers or anything like that. But when people start drinking, they certainly get more vocal.
Yeah.
It didn't happen to me, but a show that I was on, a guy decided that he needed to go to the bathroom. From where he was sitting, the bathroom was on the completely opposite side of the stage. It was, you know, the stage is a solid wall and it's a thrusted out stage from that wall. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting at one of the stage left tables, and the stage right is where you go through, and that's where the doors to the bathroom were. The headliner's up on stage and this guy says, well, that's the most direct path is the right there. So he just gets up and walks across the stage. Oh. So the headliner's up there. And he had been kind of picking on this guy a little bit earlier in the set. So he thinks that this guy's just had enough and is going to come attack him or punch him or something like that. So he just throws the microphone at the guy and it just bounces off his chest. And the guy's like stunned. And he's like, hey man, I'm just trying to go to the bathroom here.
I don't know if it's drinking or not, because I've had, I do kids shows, and I've had teachers or kids walk right on stage, right in front of me, right in the middle of the show. And I wonder, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and no one's stopping them. No one's there. Oh, and you're saying teachers too, right?
Yeah. I'm saying teachers, kids. So I don't think it's a, I don't even know if it's a drinking thing or not.
I don't know. Maybe it is. And the teachers are hiding something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something we don't know about.
Yeah, right. What's in that coffee there?
So for a couple of years, you did a trick of the week. In fact, I've seen some of them on my own Facebook group, on the Variety Arts Community Facebook group.
Yeah, I appreciate you letting me post them on there, get it out there.
Oh, I appreciate you doing them. So what was your thinking when you first started doing them? What was the, kind of the idea?
The idea was is just to get my name out more, get my social media to take off a little bit more. And I noticed that everyone that had successful social media posted a lot of content. Mm-hmm. Content can't just be an off-the-wall comment here and there. It needs to be regular, and it needs to be something that's as engaging as it possibly can be.
Yeah.
And all the people on YouTube and that kind of thing that have millions of subscribers and, you know, get hundreds of thousands of views within a short period of time of a new video being posted. Everyone that did it was consistently posting. And most of them were posting at least once a week, if not three and four times a week, or in some cases more. From a sustainability standpoint, I think doing more than one a week was a tough thing as far as, you know, with what we do with magic. It was tough enough coming up with something new to do every single week, you know, have something that would be of the quality standard that I was comfortable putting out. Okay, this is the idea that I'm going to do. In a lot of cases, it was something that's not made to play for a camera. So you have to get creative. And I don't mean angle-wise or anything. I just mean it's something that's going to look better in front of a live audience,
sure,
as opposed to a camera without a real spectator. So there were some cases that I just had no other way of doing it without actually performing it for live people. Mm-hmm. And then it was nice, you know, when a client would call and they would say, oh, do you have any videos online? Even, you know, ones that were unaware of the fact that I had done that, I was able to direct them to that. And I set them up on my YouTube page as playlists where they can just go through and it just, boom, one right after another will play.
That's got to be impressive for them, because they look and all of a sudden there's 60 videos.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like, oh, you know, I would get the it got to the point to where I would get the question, oh, do you have any videos of where I can see you perform online? It's like, oh boy, do I.
Yeah.
This is more than you bargained for, I am sure.
And once they saw those, did you feel a difference in talking to the client than before you did?
I would say it translated into getting bookings, because of the fact that I just, not only did I have, you know, a lot of videos up, but it was also over an extended period of time. It wasn't just a flash in the pan, like, oh, this guy took a week and posted a bunch of videos. This was every single week. It was a new thing without any kind of repeat or anything like that.
Right.
It definitely translated into people booking me. And then I had clients that said, hey, we were just sitting around watching videos on YouTube and came across your videos and watched 10 of them in a row, and we'd like to book you for this event or that event.
Wow. So it actually got you gigs. That's great.
It did. It did. But I did get to the point to where it was getting more and more difficult to come up with something new every week. I originally just set a goal for myself to do it for a year, every week for a year. Mm-hmm. And then a year flew by and I said, well, I, you know, might as well keep going. And then it got to the point to where I was working the road a lot more, and it got more and more difficult for me to do it, especially when I'm on a ship. I can't post it, so I would happen to shoot them way in advance and then schedule them to air. So there were many, many times that I filmed three or four within a day, and then the next day I would edit all of them and then schedule them all to air, and I changed my shirt or whatever. Oh, yeah. in between, so it looked like it was a different different day. But I try to keep it topical or that kind of thing too, with what was going on with current events. So obviously it's hard to get too far ahead on, you know, from that aspect.
That's the same with the, with this podcast. I can't get too far ahead because, I mean, look what's happening right now. Although we don't talk about it a lot. In fact, I think my my podcast is a little escape from the COVID-19 thing.
Which is great.
But it is true. If I did 10 of them without mentioning it, and all of a sudden something big like this hits, it's got to be topical.
Right.
All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit. You want to do some fact or something John just made up?
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay. This is one of my favorite parts when I'm a listener. So yeah, sure.
I'm hearing that more and more. I like that.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. If it is true, tell me a little more about it.
All right.
First headline. Matt performed at a private party hosted by comedian Dave Chappelle.
That is fact.
Is it?
Fact. You did not make that up. Yes. It's been about 11 years ago now. I got a call from an agent that I'd done some work for. It was kind of secretive. They were like, hey, we have this event going on, and I'm not opposed to performing for children, but I'm not really a children's performer. I definitely, you know, lean more towards the family and then the adult and corporate audiences. And they said, the agent says, well, I know you don't do kids' birthday parties very often, but I have a high profile client and I'd like to have you perform for them. And then they gave me this astronomically high fee that would, you know, be far more than you would ever, you know, a normal person would ever pay to have a magician at their kid's birthday party. Mm-hmm. They didn't tell me who it was, but it was in, I'm in the Dayton, Ohio area. And we have this, this town that's about 20 miles away from where I live called Yellow Springs. And it's one of the last remaining true hippie towns in America. The entire town smells like patchouli. It's very interesting. Uh-huh. So they said that this is where it is. It's a high profile client. And the only person that off the top of my head that I could think of that lived there was Dave Chappelle. Mm-hmm. They were very secretive, like I said, and then they wouldn't send me any information other than this is where it is. And this is the time you need to be there. And they said, we'll send you the details the day before the show. So when I get the email with all the details, the contact was Elaine Chappelle. So I'm like, all right, yeah, this has got to be for Dave Chappelle. So I get there and I walk in and there he is sitting right there. Dave Chappelle is there. And this was for his son's birthday party. I did my little show and then, you know, made balloon sculptures for the kids afterwards. And it was kind of cool. Dave Chappelle comes up to me and he's like, hey man, you were really great. Can I get my picture with you? And I'm like, man, this is like the exact opposite of how I saw this going down. I would, you know, I would think I would be the one asking to have my picture taken with him.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. So yeah, so I got to do that. And then from working comedy clubs and that kind of thing, I run into him every once in a while. And my home club, the Dayton Funny Bone, someone like Eddie Griffin or something like that will be working the weekend at the club. Dave Chappelle will just drop in and, you know, wants to hang out with Eddie Griffin, and then he'll end up getting up and doing a set. The entire show will have gone on, and then Chappelle will get up and do another hour on top of hour and a half show that everyone just saw. And, you know, people just sit there in awe, and everyone has to call their babysitters and say, oh, we're going to be late.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a bonus.
Sometimes it'd be, oh, we have a pop-in performer, and no one knows who it is, and, you know, a guest set, and everyone knows who Dave Chappelle is. So.
Oh, yeah. I was at it was one of the clubs in LA. I forget if it was the Improv or one of those. And I was there just watching a comedy show like anybody else. And sure enough, the MC comes up and says, ladies and gentlemen, we have somebody in the audience that all of you know. Ladies and gentlemen, Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, wow.
And here he comes up. He was in his bathrobe still. Or I don't know about still, but he was in his bathrobe and he was pretty loaded. And he gets up on stage, does 15 minutes. He was great. Everybody applauded. Woo! It was a big bonus. It was great. It was great.
That is awesome. That's a cool story for sure.
He was sweating and, you know, doing the whole Rodney Dangerfield thing. It was pretty cool.
Did he get any respect? It sounds like he did, finally.
Hey, finally. All right. Next headline. Matt once escaped from a clothes dryer.
Yeah, that's a no, that one's not true. That you made that up.
I didn't make that up. Well, I saw some of your promo shots and some of your promo shots. You're standing next to a clothes dryer.
Yeah, that shot is at the Chicago Magic Lounge. When I performed there, I did a photo shoot along with it. And for anyone that doesn't know, the Chicago Magic Lounge is a really cool speakeasy style magic theater in Chicago, surprisingly.
Yeah.
The Chicago Magic Lounge. The way that you get into it is you walk into a laundromat and there are washers and dryers and they're going, and then you you go up and you ring the bell that would be like for the attendant of the laundromat or the dry cleaner. When you do that, a big wall of washers and dryers opens up into the speakeasy. So yeah, so that photo, if you look close on the photo, one of the shirts that's like strategically posed like it's in the dryer is actually a Chicago Magic Lounge t-shirt.
All right, last one. Matt's macaw got loose on a flight to Vegas.
Yeah, that one's true. That happened.
Did that happen?
That absolutely happened. Yeah.
Okay. Well, a macaw is a giant bird, right?
Yes. Yeah. Blue and gold macaw. It's like a, you know, 4.5 foot wingspan. That's a big bird. And and it did get loose on the flight.
Did you just have it in a carrying cage, or what went on?
So I was heading out to the World Magic Seminar in Las Vegas. You know, they have the competition there, and mm-hmm. they have the two categories, the adult category, the 21 and up category was the Siegfried and Roy, you know, Golden Lion's Head Award. And then the under 21 category was sponsored by Lance Burton. You have to submit a videotape and all that kind of stuff to get, you know, even considered for the contest. And they received like 70 some videotapes. And then they select 12 finalists to come out and compete. And they don't do this anymore. I think they stopped doing it about 5 years ago, maybe a little more than that. But I got accepted to go out and compete. At the time, I was doing a pirate act. So there might be some people that remember that, because I competed at a lot of regional and national conventions with that. And that act had 6 doves in it. It had an umbrella cockatoo and a blue and gold macaw, because after all, what's a pirate without a macaw?
That's right.
I had this custom cage that a guy that owns the bird farm locally here that I had actually bought. I bought the macaw as an egg and hand raised it with a syringe, you know, using baby formula and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. He designed and built this cage for me, this kennel that was divided down the center, so my macaw could go on one side and my cockatoo could go on the other, and I am checking only one cage, but it has both birds in it.
Yeah.
So I get there, and the World Magic Seminar was in January, and living in Southern Ohio, January is not the warmest time of year. And we're talking about tropical animals here.
Yeah.
So they have a shipping embargo where ordinarily this large kennel would go under the plane, and, you know, they put in the animals in a special pressurized cabin underneath, and it's heated and cooled accordingly. But what they're concerned about is going in between the airport building itself and the plane, and them sitting out, you know, on the tarmac and that kind of thing. So yeah, they wouldn't allow me to put them under the plane. I had to buy kennels from the airline, you know, for these like duffel bag style kennels that if you went to a pet store and bought one, it'd be about $40 or something like that. But of course, they wanted to charge $75 for them.
Of course.
I had to buy 2 of those, one for the macaw, one for the cockatoo. And these are made to hold a small dog or a cat. These are not made to hold a macaw that has, you know, a big beak that delivers 2,000 pounds of pressure per square inch, you know, when they really want to. So I have the bird. It's in the kennel. We're on the flight. First, we had to fly from Dayton to Cincinnati, which if you're, you know, anything about geography, it's about 60 miles. It's a really short flight. But then from there to Las Vegas. So we did the first leg, no problem. And at this time, I'm 17 years old. So my mom and stepdad are traveling with me.
Mm.
So we're on the Cincinnati to Las Vegas leg of the trip. The macaw is just screaming the entire time. You know, it's air pressure on the plane.
Is he with you on your lap, or where is he?
Actually, this was the weirdest thing, and I still to this day I think it's very strange. They, for takeoff and landing, they made me put the birds in the overhead bin.
Oh, that's weird.
Which is very strange to me. Yeah. So she's up there and it's like, you know, just crying and screaming. And it's, you know, they're not quiet animals. When they want to be loud, they can be loud. So everyone's looking around. We finally get up and they turn off the fasten seatbelt sign. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to check on the bird. And of course, get them out of the overhead and set it on my lap or put it on the floor in front of me or whatever. I open this up and she has bitten a hole taken the entire side of this kennel out, and it just shreds. And as soon as she sees light, she just takes off and starts flying around the inside of the plane.
Great.
This is not long after 9/11. So people are still a little leery about even flying at all. She was trained to fly out over the audience and come back and land on my hand. So when I put my hand up, she's circling around on the inside of the plane. When I stood up, put my hand up, and she landed on my hand, at which point she decided to take the largest diuretic poop that I've ever seen in my life right in the middle of the aisle.
Great.
So now I have this kennel that will no longer contain this bird because it's missing the entire side of it.
Yeah.
This thing is not going to hold the bird. So I ended up having to stand in the back of the plane with the flight attendants. Were very, very accommodating. They were very nice. I'm just standing there and I held the bird outside of the cage. And then they said the rules are for the landing that it's going to have to be in the cage. So at that point they made an exception and just let me hold it on my lap. We get to Las Vegas. We hail a cab after we've gotten our checked bags, and we get in the cab. And the first thing that the bird says is, "I'm a good girl. I'm a good girl." And they're like, "Oh, no, you're not. No, you are not." And oh, by the way, through all of this, my stepfather is acting like he doesn't know me.
He is my
mom was there and she was very helpful. My stepdad is just like putting his head down, like, "Who are these people? I don't know them."
He's walking 3 feet in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. He didn't want anything to do. He did make up for it on the way back from Vegas, which I actually ended up competing and I won the contest. So it kind of made it, you know, worth it a little more because of that. But on the way back, we had a connection in Atlanta. They would let the birds fly to Atlanta, but then they wouldn't let them fly the rest of the way home. So my stepdad, being the good guy that he is, he rented a car and drove the birds because I had to get back and be in school the next morning.
Oh, that's because you're young, because you're 17 years old. Yeah,
I'm 17. So my mom and I flew, and he drove through a blizzard that night and got home at like 6 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So he did make up for the whole not acting like he didn't know me on the other flight.
Nice.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
All right, we're going to do some fan questions. You want some fan questions there, Flat Matt?
Yeah, sure.
You know that's going to stick now, right?
It is. Well, you know, that's kind of the idea, I guess. So that's good.
All right. Chris Johnson, an amazing school assembly performer out of the New York area, asks, with so many venues, I was wondering if there was a venue or niche that you enjoy the most.
Oh, man. You know, I enjoy performing. I mean, I really do. And there are certain things, certainly from different venues, that I enjoy more than others. Comedy clubs, one of the great things is that, you know, you can get away with a lot more. So it allows you to be a little more free with what you say versus, you know, a corporate or cruise ship environment. I would definitely say that, you know, working the ships is a lot of fun, getting to see cool places and travel. You know, coming from working comedy clubs where I pretty regularly would spend 8 to 10 hours in a car driving to a gig, it's nice to have the ships where they, you know, not only do they fly you, but they pay to fly you and you're not paying for your own travel. But I really enjoy comedy clubs, but I would say working the ships has become my new favorite.
All right. Steve, someone with two first names, a retired performer out of Seattle. He had a number of different questions, but kind of his overall question was, how do you construct your show? Do you have like big opener, big closer, overarching story, trick after trick? How does that work?
I start out small and kind of try to build to a climax. So generally I try to open the show with at least 5 minutes of just straight stand up. So I do some stand up and kind of establish myself and establish my character before I show them any magic. That kind of came from comedy clubs, because people hear that you're a magician in a comedy club and they're just kind of like, eh, magician, because that's not the environment that they're used to seeing that kind of thing. So I kind of felt like if I established myself as, you know, this guy's funny. Okay. Well, you know, he's funny. He's good at that. Let's pay attention to this magic stuff that he does too. Mm. You know, so I do kind of start off a little smaller, obviously just kind of talking into a microphone and doing some stand up. And then, you know, the magic kind of slowly builds to kind of a bigger and bigger crescendo, if you will.
Right. So when you do, sometimes these comedy clubs, they'll ask for like 8 minutes, you know, or something short. Are you doing mainly stand up comedy for those, for the short versions, for the little 8 minute shows or the 5 minute shows?
Well, I mean, generally I don't do those shorter sets because that's kind of more of like a guest set or an MC type of amount of time to do. And I do the feature or the headliner spot. But I generally, if I am in a scenario where I'm doing a showcase or something like that, where I have 8 to 10 minutes, I kind of try to split it 50-50 to where I'll do stand up and then close with some form of comedy magic thing. But even the magic that I do, I try to maintain getting just as many laughs during. I'm still pretty rapid firing jokes, even though a lot of times they have to do with the routine that I'm doing and they go along with the magic. It's still, at the end of the day, I'm not as much trying to fool people as I am just entertain them and make them have, you know, laugh and have a good time. I always say it's, if I can't fool you with the magic, hopefully I made you laugh. And if I didn't make you laugh, hopefully you enjoyed the magic, you know?
And if you didn't enjoy either, just drink more.
Yeah. Just drink more. You're clearly not drinking enough. If you didn't enjoy it either.
Last fan question. Conrad Cologne, an excellent magician out of New Jersey, says Matthew is awesome. I know he travels a bunch. How does he transport his equipment? Although we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier, right?
Yeah, a little bit. When I have to fly, especially, I want the majority of my stuff to be carry-on. So I have a Pelican case. Can't speak highly enough for those. If you don't know what a Pelican case is, I'm sure most people in the entertainment business do. But they're very lightweight, and I use a Pelican Air. It's the largest case that will fit as a carry-on in an overhead. So I would say about 80% of my props and equipment are either in that or my book bag. And then I have one checked bag that has the remainder of the props that don't fit in there. Or I have some items like a knife and that kind of thing that I can't take as a carry-on. So it goes into that checked bag along with my clothes. But when I fly, I wear something on the plane that I could, maybe not my ideal performance attire, but it's something I could do the show in. And I still have the majority of my equipment, so I can still do a show even if my check bag does not show up.
The advice of wearing something that you could wear on stage, even if it's not optimum, that's a great advice for anybody.
That's a Nick Lewin piece of advice. He wears a suit on the plane, at least a jacket and dress slacks and, you know, a nice shirt.
Nick Lewin has an excellent interview here on the Variety Artist podcast. In fact, he talks about a number of things that you talked about when you open at a comedy club to open the first 5 or 10 minutes with just comedy. He talks about how to get a standing ovation. It's terrific.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great guy.
All right. Thanks, Matt, for doing my show. That was fun, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had. No, you have some social media or something before I let you go?
Sure. I'm everywhere. I am at MDS Comedy Magic. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those kind of things. At MDS Comedy Magic.
Perfect. And that stands for?
Matthew David Stanley.
There you go.
that was one of those things that with doing the transition, that was something that was already established. Obviously, Matt Stanley is already taken on all of those platforms. So. I think so.
And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast and take advantage of this time to catch up on any that you missed. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of the Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.